Hello and welcome. Thank you very much for joining us for today's conversation. I'm Ger Adlam from Payslip, and I'm delighted to be joined by a lady that I imagine needs little to no introduction to many of you, not indeed all of you, and that is Anita Lettig, HR and payroll advisor, future of work thought leader, keynote speaker, and a lady who has quite literally written the book on selecting your next payroll. Hi, Anita, very nice with us.
Hi, Jer. Thank you for the invitation. Really happy to be here and hi to everyone on the call.
Huge amount of attendees are joining us. Huge amount of people have signed up for this. And Anita, when you and I, a few weeks back, when we sat down and we discussed the possibility of hosting a webinar together, a lot of topics came up, plenty of good ones that stood out to us, and perhaps some of them we might revisit in time. But you in particular felt that this topic, a conversation around the role of the payroll leader, how it has evolved, continues to evolve, what's expected, the mentality, the skill sets, I suppose you felt that that was something which maybe hasn't got enough attention.
Yeah, exactly. And that was also driven by a couple of debates and posts that I noticed on LinkedIn, which is where I spend some time usually during the day. What got me thinking about this position, because with everything that we are seeing in payroll changes, we haven't really redefined the profile. I mean, I occasionally see payroll profiles from, for vacancies, but they still seem to be defined a little bit along the lines of what we had before. Now, as you know, I wrote an article about the qualities of the new payroll leader, which got quite a few comments of people that, yes, I had written about the right things, but there was more. They want to explore what there is, what more there is, and hopefully also get some comments from the people on the call. And I would really love to see where everyone is joining us from. So put your name in the webinar chat and let us know where you are today. I'm in Amsterdam.
I'm dialing in from what is remarkably sunny Dublin, Ireland. It'd be very interesting to see. I know from looking at the sign-ups, there's a very much a global audience. But yeah, it'd be lovely to see where everyone is dialing in from. I think to your point there, Anita, I think the industry is at a really interesting inflection point. And I think when you look at things that are driving change, the pace of change, changes in workforce dynamics, technology, constantly moving goalposts in terms of compliance and legislation. There's so much happening at once in the industry that I think naturally the role, and as you say, the profile of the payroll leader is being asked to change as a result. And I think that as we continue to see it evolve from that back office function towards more of a business driver, I think there's been a lot of attention on this webinar because payroll professionals are eager to spearhead that change. They want to be ahead of it. I think they can feel there's a tide shift and want to be on top of it. And look, I think it's also always nice to learn from peers, to hear what other people in your role are experiencing and kind of learn from their experiences. And that's very much what today's conversation is all about. Definitely not a lecture. And Ed and I we have no intention of standing up here and telling you how to go about your business. This is, I suppose, a reflection on the conversations that Anita and I have both had over the weeks, learning from payroll professionals, global payroll leaders. And I suppose it's their insights and their experiences that we want to share and unpack with you. Before we dive in, perhaps people might indulge me for a moment because I'm conscious that people might know who Anita is, but maybe they're not so sure who I am, and they're not so sure who Payslip. Very quickly, Payslip is a technology-first software company that solves problems for global payroll teams. So our global payroll control platform standardizes, harmonizes, centralizes, and ultimately automates pre-payroll data from all of the disparate sources that you might have. So your HCM, time management software, it could be benefits and stock option platforms, takes all of that data and centralizes it, standardizes it, and now you can begin to use it. We also help you to simplify the management of and communication with your vendors and improve that process and that relationship, whilst automating a lot of the manual tedious work that we all know goes on behind the scenes in payroll. And ultimately, our goal is to make you and your teams 40% at least more efficient every single payroll. If you want to learn more, payslip.com. But that's enough. We'll park talk for now because that's not what today's conversation is about. It's about world-class payroll leadership in 2025, driving efficiency and strategic impact. So today's agenda and what's on the menu. Anita, we kind of sourced a lot of these topics from our audience. And so we're going to talk about the evolution of payroll and payroll leadership, the must-have skills of a payroll leader. Anita is going to give us a little session on change management and innovation, so advocating for change and pushing it through within your organization. We're going to do a little section on payroll technology, so how to go about the evaluation process, how to discover what you want, and what questions you need to be asking of a vendor. And then lastly, because it's 2025 and how can you not, we simply must have a section on AI. And even I maybe do something a little bit different, which is that we're, I suppose, going to take more of a down the middle sort of look at AI and parse some of the nonsense and the waffle that's talked about AI and sift the reality from the hype. And again, our hope in doing so is maybe give you some of the tools and the language to have a proper conversation about AI, both with vendors and within your own internal organization. Okay, there's a poll we'd like to run, which I'm going to launch now, and I'd love people to give us their input on it. And this is this question: what is the biggest driver of change for payroll and payroll leaders? So you see now the poll should be live. Very, very curious to hear people's thoughts on this one. Yeah, a lot of okay. The runaway leaders coming in already there, global payroll complexity. Anita, are there any in particular, I suppose, that stand out to you or some that you think are perhaps more impactful than others?
So I would, when we prepared for this webinar, we were talking about the fact that, would global payroll complexity land in first place, or are we now beyond that? Has everyone chosen, a solution provider that does that for them? And so this is all under control. But if it's, I cannot see the stats, but if it's coming into first place, then I think we can conclude that we're not beyond that. And I think one of the things that is not surprising in that sense is that in the last year, there were a lot of elections around the globe. Many people chose new governments, and what happens with new governments? They come with new regulations, and typically that takes about 6 months, 6 to 12 months after they have assumed office. So right now we are starting to get a glimpse in a number of countries around the world what these new governments are putting in place in terms of plans, what that means for the workforce, and therefore what that means, for legislation, for taxation, and all of that is, ends in payroll. So that is in first place. I completely understand that. And then of course, automation and AI taking second place, that's not a surprise. But what I
is.
a little bit of a surprise is that more focus on strategy seems to land at the far end. And then
Yeah.
start with every, all the conversations around also what the new payroll leader must focus on, strategic topics, helping
Yeah.
grow. I would have thought that would end a little and
Yeah.
with
Well, you know, Anita, I think maybe the, sort of the, there's an answer in the way the voting has gone. And again, I'd be very curious for people to maybe share their own thoughts on why they voted one way or another. But I think the payroll complexity challenges, and I think also the fact that an awful lot of organizations are not that mature in terms of their automation and their adoption of modern systems. And I think it's a scenario when it's very difficult to focus on the big picture stuff when you're still fighting fires on a day-to-day level. And when so much of your time and your energy is focused on the day-to-day perfunctory, tasks of payroll. So I think maybe it's a reflection that, maybe organizations aren't quite as far along the journey with systems and automation as they'd like to be. That's my suspicion at the very least, but I would be very curious to see maybe if people want to share why they voted one way or another. Integration with HR and financing, that was one that we sort of added in here. Payroll cannot any longer operate within a silo. And I think what you're seeing more and more is that companies want that, well, that seamless integration between HR, finance, and wider compensation planning so that they can have more mature conversations. Well, one thing we did in advance of this, I reached out to a number of people within my network, one of whom, David Nugent, Director of International Payroll at Cloudera. And I asked him if he just had any thoughts on what he felt were some of the biggest drivers of change in the industry. So again, I'd be curious to see, in the chat, if people agree, disagree with what David was talking about. Number one on David's list, unsurprisingly, was systems and automation. And now I will say, Anita, I think this is an example. David, I suppose, is talking from the position of someone who has gone through and overseen a modernization project. So I think it's something that's driving change, but it's far from a given that organizations have these modern systems in place. The reality is most of them don't. They're on the journey or working towards it. I'd love if people were able to share with us, are they on that journey? What they have in place, how they would, I suppose, rate their own maturity in terms of their systems and automation. From your perspective, Anita, and the conversations you have, are we talking about a small percentage of organizations that have embraced digital transformation, or are there still a lot of laggards and people who are, a lot further back?
Excuse me. Yes, I think so. And one remark, I see in the comments that the chat does not work. Feel free to use the Q&A and we'll pick it up from there.
Yeah, please do.
And when we're talking about systems and automations, I think the enterprise companies have driven the conversation for a very long time. But there are so many more companies in the mid-market. And that is especially a, I would say, a segment that is now starting to fully understand what they need to do, how they can do it. And also, let's not forget that a number of systems that were really focused on HR transformation were really only suitable for large enterprises. And it took a little longer for other systems to catch up. But the interesting thing, of course, is that over the past couple of years, many of the local vendors, many of the multi-country vendors have completely redesigned their solutions for the cloud. And when customers switch to these new solutions, that also means that they have to go through these HR transformations.
Yes.
So combine that with, I would say, almost the ask of new employees for a different employee experience. And then you come sort of at the perfect storm where also somewhat smaller companies, mid-market companies, are now rethinking what they have, looking at new solutions, looking at automations, and also in very often some sort of requirement because their current staff is transitioning out, maybe retiring. And so you want to think about how you can support these employees with fewer people in HR and payroll. That's a conversation that we have too. And then I think if you look at the other topics that David brought up, they very much tie into the global complexity that we face. Taxes, expenses with data protection compliance, but also working from anywhere that has its own challenges, everything to do with globalization and regulations.
Yeah, I think one that stood out for me, the work from anywhere challenge. And look, obviously, the pandemic sort of opened the floodgates for remote work. I have a fear, Anita. It doesn't quite keep me awake at night, but I do have a fear that a lot of companies are sleepwalking into a compliance issue with this. I was at a GPA event late last year, and there was an expert on in international tax, and his opinion was that, or his viewpoint was that there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of misunderstanding still about tax status, and that you have companies who are dangerously close to triggering things like permanent establishment. And what you find is, as is so often the case, it's an area where payroll is at the sharp end of wider company policies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And for people on the call who don't know what permanent establishment means, it's when you have an employee that works in another country where you have no legal entity, but that person does some things, and that can be, for instance, a strategic decision or like a large project that considers that country to assume that you have an establishment there. And that can lead to all kinds of consequences around taxes, around legal entities. And so for me, when I talk to people around this work from anywhere situation, the number one thing is employers should know at all times where their employees are. And as long as they work in a country, typically you're okay. But as soon as they cross the border, you should know where they are and what they are doing if they are working. If they're going on vacation, do not worry. If they answer like one email during that vacation time, do not worry about that either. But once they start to participate in calls, once you require them to work while they are somewhere else, you need to figure out if you can do that and if that's legal and if it has consequences that you cannot, that you do not understand. So, yes.
Yeah, the other one that I was, really made me sort of pay attention when I saw it come in from David was the expenses taxation scrutiny. Once a gray area, or perhaps a willfully gray area, I think perhaps in some companies, but expenses are now firmly under the microscope. You have tax offices are getting smarter. They themselves are modernizing, right? So they've got more tools available to them than ever before. And it's not just about better reporting, I think, for payroll teams. The feeling that I'm getting from the conversation I had is it's more about how can a payroll leader help build defensible, transparent policies, and implement them that ultimately won't fall apart under scrutiny. Yet again, it's an area where the payroll team is at the very sharp end of the stick, downwind of wider company policies, but staring legislation in the face and sort of going, we need to get a handle on this before it's too late.
Yeah, exactly. When I was still running global payroll implementations, this was one of the major issues. When we would go out into a country, one of the first things that we would look at is how are expenses calculated, who gets them, and how and when are they taxed. We found a lot, always found a lot of irregularities with expenses, not necessarily intentional. It's simply because people had started to reward people with expenses or started some sort of allowance where that was not allowed or that should have been taxed. And expenses can be very simple, but they can also be very complex depending on how you do that. So I'm not surprised that this is on the list, especially not for a director of international payroll.
Yeah, but all of these drivers of change, so the ones we listed in the poll and the one that David had supplied, they sort of, to me, beg the question of what's next for payroll leadership and the question of how can the role be elevated to a position of greater influence and greater authority. And there is a conversation in the industry right now about whether or not it's time for enterprise companies, anyway, to elect someone to the role of a chief payroll officer. Pete Tiliakos, someone that you and I both know very well, and I'm sure very well known to everyone on this call. Pete's been really vocal about, his support of that move and move to the C-suite. I've seen pretty much a 50-50 split in my network on people who are for and against it. Anita, what's your take?
So I look at it from a little bit of a pragmatical side, also because I have been in a C-suite. And I was thinking about that from the perspective when I was in the C-suite, would we have added a chief payroll officer?
Yes.
When you look at it from that perspective, you start to think about the other C-suite members. Now, the CFO, chief sales officer, maybe the chief HR officer. And you realize that everyone has a portfolio of responsibilities. Like the chief finance officer does accounting, has procurement. The CIO has technology, but often also information security and other type of compliance responsibilities. So everyone has a portfolio of services or responsibilities. And when you don't think about the chief payroll officer, you start to wonder, okay, what type of responsibilities should that person have? And then you end up very quickly with probably workforce strategy and HR, because why would you split HR from payroll? So I think that depending on what you feel is the most important topic in time, you can choose to have either a chief HR officer or a chief payroll officer. Typically today, it's called a chief people officer. And so then that it's another reason to bundle HR and payroll underneath that and to make sure that you have a really good view on the workforce, both from a skills and from a cost and compensation perspective. So I don't care so much about what we call this person, but I do think that being only responsible for payroll is not wide enough a portfolio to warrant a seat in the C-suite.
But the chat function is back working now. So, in comment here from one person, many clients have PY under payroll, under finance, not your including expenses. So yeah, I think you're right. It will depend on the org chart and perhaps in a sense what the potential of the role is, like how high can you go is sort of dependent on the org chart that's already in place and where payroll falls in that org chart. If I could summarize, I think two of the arguments that I see most commonly made in favor of the chief payroll officer, largely it's one that elevation to the C-suite would be a reflection of payroll's importance within an organization, and th that it's only right that it would have the same status as marketing or sales or revenue, or that's one argument. I think the other one is that a C-suite position gives you a stronger or more prominent position to advocate for change, that you can fight for payroll's corner a little more if you're in the C-suite. I'm not sure either of those by themselves are good enough reasons to have it, but I think that's what's driving the push towards the role. I will say, conversation that I had late last year with a gentleman at our own customer council, global payroll manager for an international law firm. What he said to me was, increasingly payroll data is being asked of him and being presented to the board and to the C-suite. But that does not mean that he himself is always being asked to present it. And I think there is a scenario where if you can tell a story with the data, if you can produce the data, the insights may be required and the insights may be elevated to the C-suite, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the person is going to be alongside it.
No, you're very right. And I see a comment from Sudhir. Hi, Sudhir. Who that many clients have payroll under finance. And obviously that is true. When I worked with clients, it was about half half. Half of the clients' payroll would report into finance and for the other half into HR. That is also part of an ongoing debate that has never been totally resolved. It seems to work for either. But of course, you are totally right. There are many more people in an organization whose information is being presented in board meetings. And typically they are invited, let's say every 6 months or so, to come and to talk to the board about the situation on the ground. You can do the same with a payroll leader. They are really good in providing insights with all kinds of information that you should know and be aware of at board level. By all means, bring them in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's maybe turn our focus then to another point on our conversation board, which is the skills. Ultimately, right, there are these drivers of change. So what is that necessitating, I suppose, in terms of the modern skill? And again, we have another poll that I'd love people to participate in. And that is, I'm asking the question, what skill or skills do you feel are most needed to be an effective payroll leader? Let me just push that live.
And you can only pick one.
Only one. Then there is a scenario in which you might feel that there's a couple of skills, but I suppose it's what people feel are the most impactful, or perhaps there's a sense in which they were the skills that they wish themselves were best able to master. That might be another way of framing the question. I think Anita, the demographics of payroll as a profession, they would tell us that compared to other departments, payroll tends to skew a little bit older, right? The average age is somewhere in the 40s. Typically, they're coming from backgrounds in tax, accounting, a broader HR role. I think the nature of payroll itself is that it sort of self-selects for a very particular set of skills, right? Fastidious, diligent, very good with numbers. And I think there's a sense in which, yes, those skills are important, but technology and modern processes are perhaps replacing some of those hard skills. And it's opening the door for a wider palette of skills. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is fair to say, and I cannot see where the payroll leader is going, but I think, oh, thank you. What we have seen so far is that payroll leaders typically grew into their roles because they were a payroll professional, and the career path was that ultimately they would end up in as a leader of this department. What we're seeing now is that that does not actually help so much anymore. Yes, you still need to understand payroll, but we've also seen at a number of companies where payroll leaders came from a completely different area. And that is possible simply because if you have enough experts in your team, you don't need to be the super expert yourself. So, where in the past, the payroll leader would also be the super payroll person, that is not necessary anymore. And that means that you go to more of a, I would say, managerial or leadership role that we've also seen in other parts of the business, where you need to make sure that the people that work for you are super qualified and know what they're doing, but where you focus more on the strategy, on how they work together, on what the business needs from you. And I'm really happy to see that a lot of you selected data insights and decision making as the number one skill for this payroll leader, because yes, indeed. I think we have to agree or look at a different type of skill sets for this future payroll leader. And when I wrote the article, one of the answers also was that the payroll leader should be the number one disruptor. And that was different from innovation in the sense that the number one disruptor looks at what is going on, asks really difficult questions, but it's also a little bit the person that looks is coming from the outside looking in and can still wonder why things are happening the way they are happening and can propose changes that may be not so evident for people that have been in payroll for a very long time, but could be very valuable based on the experience that the person has because they have not been in payroll for that long and they can still be surprised. And
Yes.
there, I also know that you came into the payroll space not too long ago and been having conversations about what surprises you. So what do you think of this lifestyle?
Yeah, I think one thing that surprised me was coming from a technology background, in a way, I had sort of assumed that the department had made progress with the digital transformation. I think I was surprised maybe by how far back payroll has been. And what I've learned is that, very often I think organizations just assume that payroll works because everyone gets paid every month. And I think what a lot of people in the wider organization don't realize what goes on behind the scenes, the firefighting, I think, that happens behind the scenes to make sure that everyone gets paid. So I think for me, what I've seen, the very best payroll leaders, they're not afraid of embracing change and they're not afraid of advocating for change, but they do it sensibly. And I think there's an element of risk management to it as well. But they understand that you do not have to make all of the changes at once. And that I think, in particular, payroll is an industry in which incremental positive change is far more positive than trying to make all of your changes at once. And I would say, from a technology point of view, that also holds true. You do not, or you should not be asked to rip everything out in order to put a whole new raft of technology in. And the most sensible way to go about it is to do it piece by piece, use case by use case, and slowly build that out across all of your entities. That strategically is the most intelligent way to go about it. Otherwise, you're introducing a whole raft of other complexity. So that would be my take. Again, from an outsider's perspective coming in, that I suppose would be some of the advice that I would share. The data analysis and decision making, and actually, I just want to share as well. We had some feedback from Marco from Intuitive Surgical. Again, a lot of this, I suppose, makes for intuitive sense. I suppose, excuse the pun. Some of the things that he's mentioned, the data analysis though, and interpretation, is there a little bit of a skills gap in it, or do you perceive there's a skills gap in the world of payroll? Because I think, from the perspective of, for the longest time, and this is still the case in a lot of payroll teams, access to data on demand, the ability to run reports at will, that's still a pipe dream for a lot of payroll leaders. And I think when you're in a scenario where you can't access the data when you want it, right? When you're reliant on your global provider, or you're reliant on each in-country provider, very difficult to develop the skills of data analysis when you don't have the first part right.
Yeah, absolutely. Garbage in, garbage out. That has not changed
Yeah.
in all the years that I've been in payroll. So when you run reports, you know that the data must be clean because these reports go to, to general ledger, but reports also go to tax authorities, social security, all kinds of insurance companies, and so on and so forth. That is, reports are basically a copy of data organized in a particular way so someone else can do something with it. And a report is typically not very insightful, just a list of numbers. When you really want to go towards data analysis and interpretation, you first have to understand what the situation of the business is. What is the business strategy and what types of insights can I produce based on the payroll data that I have, combination with HR, obviously, that actually will provide insights to the people running the business. And that sometimes also goes beyond what you currently have. So for instance, when you sit on a number of years of clean data, you could really use that data to predict changes in the workforce. You can use the data to predict what your retention rate is, how many people leave on an annual basis, how many people come in, what kind of salaries are you paying? Are they higher than than the people that you currently pay? So there are all kinds of things that you can pick up from the data that you have and use in a strategic way, but you need to understand as a payroll leader what kind of data is interesting for your business and what is not. Because and we also have this saying, analysis paralysis, which means that you start to analyze everything and you start to bombard your management team with all kinds of insightful reports. But in the end, the only thing that they want to hear from you is, what are the numbers that I need to be looking at because there's an issue or because it helps me understand a certain situation? They do not want to find a new insightful dashboard in their mailbox every single week. They don't have time to look at it. So that really means that as a payroll leader, you not only need to understand the strategy of the business, but you also need to go out and talk to the business leaders and ask them what kind of information they are looking for and what will be most helpful to them to make these types of decisions.
I noticed when you posted your article in advance of this webinar, one gentleman commented that finding a payroll leader who can not just understand the numbers, but can actually paint a picture and tell a story with the numbers is a rare breed. Now, I think maybe that's a little bit unfair to say it's a rare breed, but I think it speaks to that that idea that perhaps payroll leaders haven't had an opportunity to develop the storytelling skills that go along with data analysis and data presentation. And I suppose it probably comes back to technology ultimately, right? Because the availability of data is fundamentally a technology question as much as it's a process question. I don't think payroll leaders need to be software developers. And I think this is, I see sometimes payroll leaders are going down a rabbit hole of thinking they need to be masters in all technology. You used a great phrase before, Anita, to me, which was the graduation from being a user of technology to a manager of technology. Could you unpack that? I suppose as tee up the next part of our conversation around evaluating software, because the goalposts are moving for what you need to understand.
Yeah, exactly. So what I meant was being a user of technology or being, I actually use the master of technology, is that when you're a user of technology, you understand what it does and you use it to accomplish tasks, your work, basically. But when you are a master of technology, you also understand the possibilities that you are currently not using, but that might be available to you if you take one step back and think about the broader ecosystem of solutions and technology and potentially infrastructure that you have. And so I think that for the new payroll leader, I don't care if they understand whatever payroll solution you have, as long as they can ask the right questions, as long as they can see through the answers. And that does not mean they understand the itty-bitty details, but they need to understand if people are answering truthfully and know what they're talking about, or just giving them a run around and the answer is something to get rid of the person, but then not necessarily an answer that helps you move forward. So really understand the market, what is out there, where is payroll headed? Also from an automation and AI perspective, because I think that is one of the largest changes that we will see this year, next year, and in the coming years. And then being able to translate that into business advantages, but also being able to say no to certain things. If you feel that right now AI agents are a little bit too early for your payroll solution, then it's completely okay to say no. It is about having an opinion at a higher level than this solution works and this doesn't.
Yeah, I end this part of the conversation on a great quote from Rahul, Director of Global Payroll at Branch, who said, "The future leader is a strategic partner, blending compliance, tech, and business acumen to transform payroll into a value-driving function." I think that's a neat summation, as in there's a lot of different skills and a lot of new avenues that have been opened up. And I suppose it's about bringing all of those things together. They go into the skill set of the modern payroll leader. So we turn our attention to change management, Anita. This is something that you were very, very well versed in. Can you talk to me about, I suppose, barriers to change within payroll and how you surmount those barriers and how you become an effective advocate for change within your own organization?
So we are in payroll And we know that risk is something that we don't do. It is super important. Actually, the only thing that matters is delivering an accurate and a timely payroll. And anything that threatens the status quo is a risk, and you don't want to go there if it's not necessary. Okay, having said that, of course, at certain points in time, we will have to assume that risk simply because our payroll solution is end of life, or the payroll solution that we have is not suitable for the modern employee experience anymore. And especially that second one plays an outsized role currently in what I see happening in businesses. If you still have like an old-fashioned, I would say like a payroll solution of about 10 years or older, yes, they might run in the cloud, but they're probably not based or programmed, if you will, on the latest state of technology, which means that it will not allow you to easily integrate, easily interface, take the data out. And so it might be necessary in order to deliver on the strategic requests of the company to start thinking about what do I do now? There obviously comes change management into play, where you have to sit down with your payroll team and discuss what do we want to change, why do we want to change it, and how are we going to do it in such a way that we don't risk our timely and accurate payroll.
Well, if I could offer a perspective, I suppose, from the technology point of view, because I asked this very blunt question to a couple of people in payroll, what the biggest barrier to change within their organization was. And the very blunt answer, Anita, that I got back was budget. Right? That often, and maybe that I don't mean to sound facetious when I say that, because it is serious, but at a nuts and bolts level, often the answer they were met with was, okay, you need to make a business case for change. And if I could maybe offer some tips for anyone listening in terms of how you build a business case for new technology, you've got to be able to demonstrate some level of ROI. And unfortunately, that's easier said than done. And if you pick the right vendor, they'll work with you to help you build a business case. But one interesting sort of nugget or tip that I might share, which came from one of our clients, and he told me when he was advocating to take on payroll software within his organization, and he was presenting his business case to the CFO. The CFO largely wasn't all that interested in the day-to-day automation and the nuts and bolts, how it was going to make the life of the payroll team easier. But what did make his ears prick up was the reporting functionality, the notion that it when you ask for a report, I'll be able to produce it in a matter of hours, not days and weeks. That made sense. When he pulled on the levers of an integration with NetSuite so that GL files could be produced really quickly and just sent over to NetSuite, that made the CFO take note. And so I think, from my point of view, when you're advocating for change, it's about tailoring the language to whoever is signing off ultimately on the budget or whoever needs you to give approval. It can be very easy to think of it from your perspective, why you want the change or why your team needs it. But if you can articulate that in the context of the wider business, you're going to have a much greater chance of actually pushing through the change. Anita, do you have any tips otherwise on I suppose pushing through change? When it comes to budget, sometimes there are just immovable hills.
Yeah, and I think one of so wh so when I still worked at a payroll outsourcing company, we always said that our largest competitor was not a company, it was having no budget. And I think that for the past 10 years or so, it was really hard to justify a payroll migration because it would not materially change the functionality. But since, let's say, 2 or 3 years, we are now seeing this very modern, very innovative payroll engines come to market, delivering functionality that was not available before. One being the continuous running of payroll, which means that you are able to deliver an up-to-date payroll every single minute of the day, and you don't have the time crunch at the end of the month where everything comes together and payroll professionals work so many hours to deliver and you know, the payroll runs to test it, to check it. You can now spread that much more evenly over the month. And that means that, you know, this is an actual time saving for payroll professionals, which ties into your budget, which ties into your business case. So I think right now the technology is also in such a state that you can have a much better conversation with a CFO or with the C-suite why you actually need to do this.
Well, I might leave this section on what I thought was a brilliant quote from someone in your network, Louis van den Oord. He said, "Innovation is not simply a matter of implementing new technology, but of thoughtful change." And I would say, you know, very often we think of technology in terms of change management, but it can be something as simple as an optimization of your internal processes, right? It doesn't always have to be technology driven, and you can, as a leader, implement effective change just by altering and tweaking your processes, your collaboration with other departments. Doesn't always have to be technology, just to make that point. Okay, there's a question in, and because it sort of tees up this next section from an anonymous attendee. That's perfectly all right. You're not obliged to give your name. But how would you go about choosing the right, in that in inverted commas, technology or solution across business geographic areas? So larger BUs versus smaller ones, do you go to one payroll solution or not? Workday being the HIRS across the countries. Anita, I'll throw it open to you. What is your process for evaluating technology as a solution? Can you give us some tips and some guidelines? Because you've literally written the book on it.
I was gonna say I wrote a book about it, where I also speak about or write about how do you actually make that choice. And it depends on a number of factors. For instance, are you happy with your current payroll solutions? And if that is the case, then you might need to look at a completely different situation, because you could, for instance, use something like Payslip and to make sure that you unify all your data, but don't necessarily need to replace all your underlying payrolls. Because as soon as you cross over, let's say, like a 5 to 10 country threshold, a global payroll implementation becomes a really expensive but also really long undertaking, especially if you have large BUs, small BUs, you are in different industries, you have different collective labor agreements. I've done a number of those. It can become complex very quickly. The flip side of that is potentially to divide your global company into a number of regions and then select a provider per region, because most of the providers are better in running payroll for a number of countries that are adjacent or that are close together, instead of countries that are all over the world. And I will tell you that all of the global payroll vendors will use a combination of technology and underlying solutions and third-party vendors to stitch a global payroll offering together. Now, I cannot go into more details without knowing, you know, the background, but I think it provides a little bit of an idea of what you should be looking for.
Maybe I think to touch upon your point that you make there, I think you need to be wary. I think there's a lot of companies who are really their services companies with a very thin layer of technology over them. But they're maybe presenting themselves as technology providers. And I think that's you need to be very clear on what it is you're looking to achieve. If you don't have any problem with the actual service that you're getting in each region, then in my opinion, you ought not be obliged to take out that provider just so that you can avail of the benefits of technology and automation that go with it. But that would be Payslip's perspective, that you should be able to leverage technology, automation, AI, data integrations without needing to rip and replace your vendors. And because those relationships are important and they have the expertise. If I could make one other recommendation to sort of the payroll leaders on this call, one thing that gets lost in the payroll evaluation process and where it really catches people out is that at the same time as you are running your evaluation, maybe you're taking demos and you're kicking the tires on different solutions and you're building out your use cases, maybe you're exploring a proof of concept. At the same time as you're doing that, also be investigating what your own internal processes are around IT reviews, legal reviews, and maybe even give those teams a heads up to say, look, we're in an evaluation or a tendering process. There's going to be contracts coming your way, or there's going to be technical documentation coming your way, and understand what your internal timelines are to get those done. Because what can happen is you go through your evaluation, you've selected your vendor, and now the internal processes kick in, and it takes 2, 3 months, and suddenly your timelines, you thought, okay, great, we're going to be in implementation phase in Q1. Now that get kicked out to Q2, and suddenly your roadmap for the year is sent askew. So I would say understand your internal processes. If you can talk to other leaders within the organization who have made a large software purchase before, and understand what your internal mechanisms are, because those are the things that will delay the process well beyond the point of making an actual decision. Okay, lastly, Anita, as we come to a close, and that is the evergreen topic of AI. Okay, Anita, you have some very, very strong opinions on this. I'm almost loath to let you off the leash to reveal sort of your true feelings on it. I'll launch a poll while we do, but I suppose again, your perspective on AI in the industry, how it's being used, how it's not being used, what it's being sold as versus what you think it can actually deliver.
Sure. Thank you. So first of all, don't get me wrong. I'm excited by the possibility of AI, but at the same time, I'm also conscious of the limitations of the technology at this point. And that means that we have to be very careful and very thoughtful when we start to use AI within the payroll space. And there's one reason for that, and that is that payroll needs to be correct. It cannot be 99.5% correct. It cannot be 120% correct. It needs to be 100% correct. If it isn't, it's wrong. With AI, you have to think about probabilistic versus deterministic. Probabilistic is it can be a little larger, it can be a little smaller, but you know, directionally it is correct. Deterministic is black or white. It is right or it's wrong. AI is very good in probabilistic, especially generative AI I'm talking about, not so good in deterministic. Until we solve for that, we can use generative AI in payroll to provide advice and feedback to service documents, to maybe help us write documents, to maybe interpret legislation. We cannot fully depend on it to explain, for instance, the numbers on a payslip to someone or to change the numbers in a payroll
Yes.
on my behalf.
Yeah.
I would say, so I always encourage people to experiment with AI to that you really understand what it can and what it cannot do.
Yeah.
Probably try it out within HR first where the stakes are high, but not as high as in payroll. And if that works, then yes, by all means. But I think we need to wait a little bit and see what is happening. What we've also noticed, or what I've noticed, is that all of the payroll vendors that have announced these new Gen AI applications or functionalities for payroll have delayed them. And I think the simple reason is that they could not get it to stick 100%. But we'll see. A couple of them have they will come out this year, May, June timeframe. So I'm really curious.
I suspect you're right in terms of what the hesitancy around releasing some of them would be. I also think you'll see what I hope to see is a sort of a hand-holding period. I think we're a long way off any true payroll leader fully entrusting AI to make decisions, make calculations. I think to Diane's point here in the chat that it's payroll potentially can communicate better with non-numbers people using AI. That could be one of the areas of use cases. I think that's a good point. For me, it's about supplementing the role, supplementing the functionality of payroll with AI as opposed to replace. I've put together just a very quick slide on some sort of areas of focus for people when they're asking questions about AI. The reason is we get a lot of questions, and particularly in the last 6 months, the number of questions about AI from people who are evaluating our software has increased exponentially. But what's clear is I think people don't necessarily know what questions they should be asking. They know they should be asking questions, and I think what you're seeing in a lot of organizations is there's budget for AI initiatives, right? So if you can tie something you're doing back to AI, budget is being unlocked. But people don't necessarily have a framework or a grounding in what they should be asking. So I suppose here's our five pillars that I would be saying to people when you're kicking the tires on how a technology vendor is approaching AI. Think of it in these five ways. Can they clearly define the problem they're actually solving? Because there's nothing more wasteful than AI for AI's sake, and that is what will lead to trouble. Are people just developing features because it's the new hot thing, or have they actually got a specific use case in mind? Have they the right data? Are they actually building it off a good data set? Because if you're not, it can introduce inherent biases and lead to very, very bad outcomes. How accurate? What's their threshold for accuracy? Benita's point, less than 100% accurate for a deterministic result is wrong, is bad. Unless it can give you 100% accuracy where you need accuracy, you need to be very cautious. Four, has it stress tested? Can it cope with large data sets, or has it been exclusively focused on small amounts of data where it's easier to get a handle on? And lastly, what is their, I suppose, their approach to developing it and rolling it out incrementally in line with user feedback? So those are just five things that you might want to touch upon when you're evaluating AI, because otherwise it's a minefield and it's very easy to get lost in the hype. Okay, Anita, we're coming to a close. I will open it up very briefly to any questions, but I'm also very conscious of people's time that we're coming up and brushing up against the hour. I'll just say from my perspective, as we're sort of maybe waiting for a question to come in, I've really enjoyed the conversation, Anita. I'd love to hear from people if they'd like Anita and I to unpack any of these topics in more detail. We have quite a lot, Anita, and I think we did our best to chew over all these topics, but the reality is one of these things probably could be its own hour-long conversation itself.
Absolutely. And I think I want to mention one more comment from Jane. Yes, Jane, you are absolutely right. When we talk about AI, we need to be very specific. And most of my comments were focused on generative AI, specifically because traditional AI has been embedded in payroll for a number of years, where we do, for instance, automatic error checking, compliance checking. That is the traditional form of AI, not generative AI. So using algorithms to spot outliers, to check for mistakes, 100%. You can reliably do that. Using generative AI to answer payroll employee questions, you might want to do that for the communication, but be very careful about the numbers. So,
I will say, Bill Larkin, eagle-eyed Bill has called me up. I didn't actually share the last poll results on AI. I can tell you though that the runaway winner, Bill, was our cautiously optimistic. So there's a sense that yes, people believe AI can make a difference. But as you might expect from payroll people, there's a healthy dose of caution and hesitancy before we rush in with 2 feet and have AI do everything for us. So thanks, Bill, for keeping me honest with the poll results. Any more questions coming in? Yeah, you're welcome, Bill. Well, look, I think let's leave it there. This has been a hugely fruitful conversation. In terms of contact details, Anita, where can people reach you if they want to reach out and avail of your expertise?
Yeah, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I also have a website called anitaletting.com, but LinkedIn is probably the easiest.
Yeah, and likewise, if anyone wants to connect with me, and please do, I'm always happy to make more connections within the industry. Gerard Adlam, there's only one of me on LinkedIn, so you'll be sure to find me. And of course, I would encourage you to visit payslip.com if you would like to learn any more about our software and the work we're doing to help global payroll leaders transform their processes and their operations. With that, I will say thank you very much to Anita for joining us. Thank you very much to all of you in attendance. And we will see you on the next one. Thank you very much.